Hello, welcome to My Camino, the podcast. I'm Dan Mullins, and I'm so pleased you've taken the time to hit play. Merry Christmas for next week as well, and happy holidays, and may your festive season be wonderful with all your loved ones, family, and friends. This is a weekly podcast about El Camino de Santiago, or the Way of St. James. It's a pilgrimage across Europe, and pilgrims walk from all over the world to the city of Santiago de Compostela. Now, it's not just a long walk or a long hike. It's a pilgrimage, a chance to find something, an opportunity for growth, for renewal, for a new beginning. Or maybe you're trying to find answers. I receive emails and messages from all over the world. Indeed, if you want to get in touch, just go to danmullinsmusic.com. I'm normally pretty good at getting back to people, but I have a very demanding day job as a producer on the top-rating radio show in Australia, so I can tend to be a bit busy, but I'll do my best to get back to you. The US writer Thomas M. Siriano wrote his memoir, The Constant Outsider, Memoirs of a South Boston Mechanic, 10 years ago. He wrote, "Each of us is a book waiting to be written, and that book, if written, results in a person explained." Well, I received an email a fortnight ago from the American pilgrim Kenneth Strange Jr. He wrote to tell me he'd written a book. Kenneth Strange is on the line from California. Welcome, pilgrim.
Dan, good to be with you.
I sometimes say I don't know a lot about my interviewee, but, you know, I kind of know a bit about you because I've read the book. The book's called Your Camino, One Couple's 500-Mile Pilgrimage on the Camino de Santiago. You and your wife, Aurora, or Rory, walked together. But let's go back a bit, Ken. You've actually had a long association with Spain. Take us through what you call a love affair.
Well, it's been a lifelong love affair with the country, and I suppose it begins oddly enough, in Brooklyn. My father was a police officer with the New York Police Department, and he had been assigned to a Hispanic neighborhood in Brooklyn, and he wanted to communicate effectively with the residents. So he purchased a record, a Spanish record, and he brought it home and he started practicing Spanish. And you know, I'm following him around like a puppy. And he says, why don't you practice with me? So I did that, fell in love with the sounds, especially when he said the name Isabel. And I kind of took to it like a song. And then in high school, I took a high school trip to Madrid with the group. And spent 2 weeks there, and I met some Basque people who were also taking a trip to Madrid, a school trip. And oddly enough, I made friends with these Basques, and we can continue to be friends even today. And then later, I became a Spanish major in college, and then took a junior year abroad in Madrid, studying at the University of Madrid. And since then, I've made, I guess, about a dozen trips to Spain since then. So I've always loved Spain, and it's quite a country.
What is it, do you think, that appeals to you so much?
I would say it's exotic enough. I love flamenco music, yeah. And the dance, the food is wonderful. And the people just seem to me to be so open, so hospitable. And I'm a history buff, so there's a lot of history, as you know, in Spain. So and I've been studying the Knights Templar and the Spanish Civil War and the history of the Camino itself. So all of these things factor into this love for Spain.
And you actually met Martin Sheen really early on, too, didn't you?
Well, that's a funny story because I actually met Martin Sheen in 1979. And, my mother and I were in an airport in New York City. His flight had just come in from Los Angeles, and he was just kind of riding the crest of that iconic movie, Apocalypse Now.
Of course, yeah.
So he and his entourage were, you know, in the terminal coming toward us, and I was with my mother, and I was actually headed out to England on my way to Saudi Arabia, where I had taken a job. And my mother said, asked me, Ken, who is that guy? And I said, that's Martin Sheen. He's, you know, Apocalypse Now. And so as he and the entourage just almost got to us, my mother surprisingly screamed out, "Martin Sheen." And that just detained him and the entourage. And he looked over and he stopped and he big smile and he said, "Hi." And so oddly enough, that was the first time I met Martin Sheen. And then so many years later, our paths cross again. We're doing some volunteer work in for the church down in Tijuana, Mexico. And, you know, he was telling me about his the movie The Way and how his son had directed him in the movie and how, you know, he had fallen in love with Spain because he, you know, he has Spanish roots, of course.
Yeah.
But such a nice man, such a wonderful man. And he was nice enough to read my manuscript when we came back from the Camino. He was nice enough to read my manuscript, It's Your Camino, the book. And he called about 3 days later and he said, Ken, I love this story. It's special. And, you know, that, of course, made me feel pretty happy. And then I said, hey, would you, Martin, would you mind? Well, he asked me, he said, can I do anything for you? And I said, yes, you know, if you can provide a quote for the book cover, that would be splendid. And a few days later, I received a handwritten letter, and he had a list of quotes. I think there were five of them. And he said, take any one or a combination thereof.
How lovely.
What a nice man.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I agree wholeheartedly with him because it is a great book. And part of the reason we're talking is to promote it. So we won't give away too much, but if you've ever seen a book that I'm researching, it looks like a Christmas tree. It's got yellow, green, and orange highlighters, yellow stickers, all right? So I've got it here in front of me, but I've written a script, but I want to throw a few passages at you, some of the parts of the book that I highlighted. You said, in the beginning, I came to the Camino hoping to accomplish several goals, travel and discover the allure of Pamplona, lose weight, come up with enough material for a book, take a break from life, and perhaps, just maybe, learn something about myself. As you can see, these goals revolved around me. When I got off the Camino, none of that seemed to matter anymore. That's a very powerful observation, Ken. That none of that seemed to matter anymore. Because you went with a very firm intention and came home leaving it all behind.
I suppose it was really so many items of a bucket list. And when we actually got to the Camino and started to flow within the Camino, I learned that just staying in the moment and not expecting too much and embracing surprise and what's around the corner, that seemed to become more important than anything else. And by the way, the losing the weight thing, well, that went out the window pretty quickly because you know, Dan, about those pilgrim's meal. And it's tough to admit this, but I actually gained 5 pounds on the Camino.
You know, I should have asked you. That's funny. But I should have asked you, in the course of all of your love affair and your previous associations with Spain, had you ever walked any of the Camino, or was this entirely the first time?
Entirely the first time. We had been to we had been to Santiago de Compostela in 1985 when we were I was returning from the Middle East with Aurora, and we stopped in Spain once more. We drove up to Santiago de Compostela, and it was I'd say early fall, but it was dreary and damp, drizzling, and there were in 1985, we didn't notice any pilgrims there. As hard as we looked, people were just not making the trip in the numbers they're making today.
No.
Back then. And, you know, let me just, I did a lot of research on the Camino, and I'll just throw this at you. But when I was studying at the University of Madrid back in 1975, 76, which was the Franco era when he just died. But in that year, there were 74 pilgrims that made the journey. And, you know, as you know, last year, I think there were 327,000 pilgrims who made the journey. So the numbers are just, exponentially increasing.
That's a very powerful observation, isn't it? Really, when you think about it, from 76, 40 years later, there's almost 400,000. I know there's a lot of talk about how the Spanish managed the future of the Camino.
Mm-hmm.
I can't help thinking when I do think about it that the energy is what will save the Camino. The collective spirit and energy of the pilgrims, I think, will sustain it. Perhaps it's a bit of a romantic view, but I can't see it sort of being ruined, if that makes sense.
I'm with you, Dan, 100%, and I hope that's the way it turns out.
Yeah.
I've been monitoring some of the Camino sites, and I noticed this past year that there have been some pilgrims turned away at the lodging for accommodations in some of the first few villages on the Camino Frances. And I'd heard people talking now about a possible lottery to do it. I hope it doesn't come to that. But it's just become so popular.
Yeah.
It's a social, it's a religious phenomena.
And
you know that as well as I.
Yeah. I've got marked here another passage. You wrote, "The Camino was greater than any one person's personal goals or cutting another notch in a belt full of achievements. It was about putting oneself out there for other people, for one's fellow pilgrims. It was no longer about me. It was about them." And that's a lovely summary of what is sometimes very difficult to put into words.
Thank you. I just felt so inspired. My wife and I felt so inspired by our fellow pilgrims that we just wanted to do everything to help them, to assist them, whatever that would be in whatever situation we had come upon. And I mentioned it in the book, my wife's a nurse, and, she took care of a few pairs of feet out there, blisters, and, of course, I speak Spanish, and a number of the pilgrims don't, so I was out there, can I help you translate? Can I help you get lodging for the evening? Or even, even just listening to people. Like the Serbian pilgrim, the young man who walked with us with joy, and he'd come out of a crushing relationship and had been really surprised when she left, and so he just needed someone to talk to, and I was there. I was happy. I was there for him. To bounce some things off of each other and to listen and to empathize with that person. I'm a people person, so it's something that it just seems instinctive to and I'm curious to find out about other people and if I can help them or empathize with them or and learn something as well in the process. I'm happy to do so.
Did you write the book on the Camino?
What I did is I wrote several short stories, and I kind of put it up. I was not in the social media yet. I did not have a Facebook account or a Twitter, anything like that. So you know, I was using LinkedIn, and that's a more serious business-like platform. But nevertheless, I put out a few photos with some short little abbreviated stories, and I got some really nice feedback. And so I thought, you know, just keep going, keep writing these short stories. Frankly, Dan, the book wrote itself because, you know, you'd meet pilgrims and, you know, everybody had an incredible story. You know, they were doing it for a myriad of reasons. And so I found it just fascinating to kind of chronicle some of the people whom we met along the way. So yeah. When I came back, when I finished, the real trick was then to take the short stories and then put them all together in a book form. And I joined a writer's club when I got back, and boy, did that help as well, because I found writers who would critique my works, and they would provide constructive feedback.
Yeah, terrific. You said, in telling this story about my brother and sister pilgrims, I learned more about humanity. And in learning more about humanity, I could better understand that my reason for living was to serve others. How has the Camino impacted your life at home?
Well, I find myself more at peace, more at ease. I'm not as affected or troubled by minor things that we come up with day-to-day life. It's kind of comforting to know that, hey, look, I've done this Camino with my wife. I feel, you know, we've come closer to God, and so this kind of just seems to naturally carry over into day-to-day life when we return to our day-to-day life. So I just feel more at peace, more satisfied, and to be honest with you, we have a yearning to go back and do it again, yeah. Maybe a different, try a different route. But again, all of this it was really inspired by the pilgrims, and that's why I wrote the book.
You actually quote James Michener in his book Iberia, where he wrote about his third pilgrimage in 1966. He said, "I have long believed any man interested in either the mystic or the romantic aspects of life must sooner or later define his attitude concerning Spain." So tell us about walking into Pamplona and the children playing handball.
Oh, boy. That's
I loved it.
Dan, you got me there, Dan. Oh, boy. You know, I was really in pain at the time. In the book, I mentioned that, you know, during our warm-ups, our practice hikes around in and around, you know, Agoura Hills, Woodland Hills, which you know, you've been there.
Yeah.
All of these trails in the Santa Monica Mountains. I found out that when I got up to about 12 miles, my knee, my right knee, really started to become painful. So those first few days on the Camino were just very, very painful for the knee. Even though I had gotten a cortisone injection like just before I left from the doctor, but I saw my wife and this Irish woman, very, very sweet woman, Teresa, kind of disappearing into Pamplona, you know, blocks ahead of me, and I'm just falling further and further behind. I got very discouraged, and you know, I was just about in tears. I just thought, this is really the end of it. It just doesn't look good. And then out of nowhere, I see this everyday kids, these kids playing handball or some type of game. Yeah, handball. It was in a little street just to the side street. And I thought, I really need, and again, this goes back to people, and I think I can really get some energy here from these. They were just such beautiful kids. And that's when I kind of intervened in their handball game. And, you know, I got a little silly, and I said a bunch of silly things, like, I'm the king of handball. And some of the kids disagreed with me pretty loudly. No, you're not. You're a fraud. You know. And this little brunette, the little girl, she must have been 9 years old, and she grabs my sleeve and says, "Don't worry about them. I'll play you for a euro." And just that her attitude, her spunk, just that natural reaction from kids, it just boosted me. It gave me this lift. And, I quickly vacated the premises and let them get back to the game. But just that carried me for another mile or 2 miles or whatever it was. And sure, I was in pain, but that happiness that girl had just given me, those kids, got me to Pamplona.
And that story sums up perfectly your motivation for writing the book. You say the Camino has a way of bringing out the best in our fellow human beings. I'm talking about real feelings here, about getting all the hugs you can get, a hearty slap on the back, and a cheerful Buen Camino from people all around the world. You wrote, since beginning the Camino, we, that's you and Aurora, must have been involved in a dozen or more conversations about why people choose to walk it. So, why did you walk the Camino de Santiago?
Well, I think it was for all the reasons that we had talked about earlier. That kind of the bucket list items. But at the same time, I felt that, I had to do it. I felt that there was, I was going to learn something from it. I didn't have really high expectations. I wanted, again, to let it flow into us, into me. But, in the end, when it was all said and done, when I got to the cathedral at the end, there was just this magnificent moment, this, and I refer to it as this kind of emotional tipping point, where all of the experiences came together at this one moment in time, right after the Pilgrim's Mass, in this little chapel off to the side of the cathedral, where, I was asked to talk about some of, the highlights of the trip in front of other pilgrims. That's when it just all hit me at once. And there was, I felt so much, and this is what really surprised me, because, if someone says, "Oh, I had this kind of out-of-body experience," and I'd be skeptical myself, but here I was having an out-of-body experience in this chapel, and I don't know whatever it was—maybe God's intervention, or maybe it was just some emotions. But who cares? Because at that moment, I actually felt as if I was with angels. Actually, the other pilgrims, and they became angels, and for just this moment in time, I was on heaven's doorstep, and this incredible love and peace just kind of soaked through my whole body. And I thought, if this is heaven, I want it. And that was the big surprise for me, this kind of catharsis of spirituality and emotions and the pain and suffering to get there and all the camaraderie. But that's what I received from the Camino.
Why did Aurora walk the Camino?
Because she is a fairly religious person, and she has this love for hiking, and she too has a love for Spain. And I think for all of those reasons, I was doing it. She was going to be a part of that, yeah. And I'm glad she was.
You wrote in the book, the consensus among pilgrims is the Camino is an extremely personal experience. There was no template, no standard, no one reason or way to do it. If you wanted to walk the Camino in 3 weeks or 3 years, hey, it's your Camino. If you choose to take a bus or a taxi on the Camino because you're tired or injured, hey, that's okay. It's your Camino. And that's the title of the book. But in that book, the Polish pilgrim Carolina told you her reason for walking. She said, "I've lost a part of myself and I wish to find it again. I thought that was a very good reason to walk, Ken.
Yes, yes. Yeah, no, it was that was very touching. I remember that, and this was a woman that actually, from behind, looked like my mother.
Yeah, you said that, yeah.
If you recall. But, you know, when she said that, I understood perfectly, and I didn't want to pry because I just felt like that was all she was going to disclose to us, and it was very personal. Hmm. So I hope you find what you're looking for. That's what I understood from her.
Yeah, there's a common theory. We've talked about it here before, but I like the way you talked about it in the book. The personal stages of the Camino can be broken down into three parts: the physical, the psychological, and the spiritual. Can you just elaborate on that? Perhaps there's someone listening who hasn't heard that description before, that there are three parts to it: the physical, the psychological, and the spiritual Camino.
Right. So the physical part of the Camino is really the adjustment to the body's shock, where you're, you know, hiking through mountains and you're walking. There are long days where you're walking, from 8 a.m. maybe to, and again, we were slower. So we were talking about getting in 6 p.m.
Right.
So those, you know, maybe a week of that, of this, of that physical Camino, then the second part, and you're going to have to remind me again, I don't.
The psychological part?
Yeah. The psychological part is, you could feel this as you're going through that flat section in Spain called La Meseta. And it's just flat, and the landscape is not too varied, and it becomes tedious, and you know you're struggling with the landscape. There's just not a lot happening except you just keep walking and walking, and you've got to do it every day. I mean, here we go again. and you get in, and you ice up your knees, and you have a meal, and then you get horizontal, and then good morning, we're back on the Camino. So that was an interesting part, and I noticed that some pilgrims at this point said, I don't want to deal with this part, I'm going up ahead, I'll take a taxi or a bus, but you know, we kind of toughed that out, and then finally that you come to the end, and that's about a week, I would say, in Galicia, in Sarria, you start to feel this spiritual Camino, because you're near the end, you've had all these experiences, you're reflecting about those experiences, you're reflecting about, you know, what this Camino means to you, and, so that's the spiritual phase. So yeah, those are pretty much the three phases.
I there's a part in the book where you talk about a couple who were blind, who were walking the Camino together. I got very emotional when I was reading that. And perhaps we won't tell too much of that story because it's a really good reason to buy the book. But when I read it, I thought, that's a story, and that takes extraordinary bravery, doesn't it? And belief in one another too, Ken.
Absolutely, Dan. This was a couple, a blind couple from Minnesota, our country. And they were Russell was blind from birth, and his wife was legally blind. And yet, there they were out there, like anybody else. They had an app for the blind. I think it's called the Blind Square app, and they also were using Wise Pilgrim app. But here they were, truth be told, in my whole lifetime, I've spent maybe a few minutes with blind people, and maybe walking a blind person across the street. And I've never taken time in my entire life to spend any time with blind people and to find out what their challenges are, you know, how they cope with life. And here they were, and that's another, that was a big discovery for me as well, that I had taken my senses, the sense of sight specifically, for granted my entire life. And it culminated, as you recall, when we got to that little town, I think that was Arroyo San Bol, and we stopped, and we were, and you know, it was a beautiful sight. There was a little bridge, Roman bridge. There was a stream. There were flowers and trees. And then Russell, just out of nowhere, said, "Ken, what do you see?" And, you know, I lost it. I really lost it. When I think back, I was speechless for a second. But I composed myself, and I said, "I owe it to this man to tell him what is out there in the best words I can to describe what it is in front of us." And it really shook me up, and so, it still shakes me up.
Yeah, it's a great story. Honestly, I'm getting teary thinking about it again. It's just magic. You know, I should say to you, just while I think about it, you know, for somebody who's never been a writer before, it's beautifully written, and it's a very easy read and a very enjoyable read. I don't know if it's in my script to congratulate you about the way it's written, but it's somewhere in the words, all these words here in front of me, I'm sure it is. But just while I think of it, it is beautifully written, and that part, that little section of the book is very moving. Yeah, it's lovely. You and Aurora walked together. Indeed, as I said before, the subtitle of the book is One Couple's 500-Mile Pilgrimage Across Spain. Did you always walk together?
No.
Right.
I have to smile because, we've been together about 38 years, but who's counting? You're together as a couple. You're together on the Camino 24/7, and so I always tell people that, you know, couples that want to do it, you make sure that your spouse or your significant other is your best friend, because you know when you're out there, you're going to have to make some compromises. I quickly learned that. Aurora, you know, she has to stop at every church along the way and go in and say a prayer. And you know, after a while, I was like, wait a second, you know, we're never going to meet our schedule of 31 days because that's all we have if you keep going into every church along the way. So we had a compromise in that way. And, you know, I wanted to stay an extra day in Ponferrada at the castle for the Knights Templar, but you know, she said, no, you know, we have to move on. You know, you've had your one day of castles, you know, time to get to churches. it's give and take. And we walked apart sometimes. Most of the time we were together, but every once in a while, you know, there'd be some women, they'd start talking to my wife, and I'd kind of peel off, and I'd find a guy, and we'd talk, and, you know, so we'd go back and forth like that for 500 miles.
Yeah. You wrote of walking alongside your wife, "Silence can be golden. It provides an opportunity for introspection, to look within and assess who we are, where we've been, and where we are going." And it's very important, Ken, isn't it, to be a good listener?
Yes, I'm. If anything, I'm a good listener. In fact, I made a career out of it. Maybe you have read my bio.
Yeah.
But the old 80-20 rule. Listen 80% of the time and talk 20% of the time, and you can learn some extraordinary things and. You know, that's what I love doing is listening and then, you know, writing a story and telling the story and sharing it with the reader. That's what turns me on, that motivates me.
Yeah, and there's this great passage I have here highlighted. We came upon a fence festooned with hundreds of small handmade crosses of rope, twigs and branches, stretching for almost a mile. It was as if we were entering an Indian burial ground. These wayside crosses from our fellow pilgrims are part of the Jacobean smorgasbord of tiny shrines, chapels and Kian stones, all of which serve as an ambulatory confession and absolution. As they say in university exams, Ken, discuss.
Well, you know, I think the thing that really stood out there were these handmade crosses that were on the fences, and you know, it was kind of a gloomy weather, and it was just when I saw it. And we're kind of climbing uphill. All of that, it was mud and some inclement weather. Like I said, it hit me as, you know, like Indian burial grounds. You know, like something you'd see in a movie. And so that was my. And then all of that just seemed to kind of lead from you know that with absolution and you know putting the crosses up there and then these stone cairns, and it just. It all seemed to run together, if you will. So I wanted to make sure that got into the book.
As well. Yeah, it's
pretty powerful.
It's very powerful. And when you come across them, if you're lucky enough to have a bit of space and time and pause, they're very powerful places. The energy is palpable.
Absolutely, Dan. You're absolutely right. And also, the other thing that hit us was you would see these. These were for people who had kind of memorials, right? People who had passed away on the Camino, and those reached out and they grabbed you and they shook you, and. You know, you'd feel bad for that person, and on the one level, on the other level, you think, what a wonderful place to die, you know, on this sacred pilgrimage. You know, if you're going to die, you know, this would be the place. But they would remind you every so often that people, it's serious walking these distances and the weather and all of that stuff, and even taking on cars and trucks sometimes on some of these paths, it's all out there. It's a challenge.
You met some nuns, and you said you remain in awe of nuns, in awe of their sacrifice to remain celibate, to do works of charity, and to meet all challenges, even this Camino, with good cheer. To me, Ken, it's their humility. And they are true pilgrims, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely! I was in such awe of these two sisters. I think they're from the Order of Mercy in Krakow, Poland. But you're right; they were so humble, and they gave of their time. People wanted to touch them and be blessed by them, and to be in their company. And they took it all in, and they just. They too went with the flow, and there was a lot of give and take with them, and we just fell in love with, as you said, Dan, their humbleness, their humility, all of those things, so attractive to us, and we were so grateful to have spent some time with them, and they continue to correspond with us. We received a WhatsApp, some photos just a few weeks ago. They were back finishing the Camino this time. They finished it.
How lovely. Fancy the nuns sending you messages on WhatsApp.
I know.
It's hilarious.
It is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's very cool. Tell us about blisters, Kenneth Strange Jr., or lack thereof.
thanks, Dan. in our case, it was really a lack thereof because...
Yeah.
Well, we did not have any blisters, and I think we have to give credit to the footwear that we had. You know, we knew, and we've been hiking for many years, so we know that, you know, if you want to do it right, if you want to do it safely, if you want to do it comfortably, you're going to have to shell out some extra money to get the best equipment. And so, again, this is all about walking, isn't it, 500 miles. So, you know, we went down at, okay, here we go back to Woodland Hills again, but, you know, went to the REI store there, and we got some very nice shoes. And, you know, we had the REI socks, and that seemed to do the trick for us. I think my wife had one blister and I had zero. So, and when you met other pilgrims and you had, I'm sure you've had this experience too. Some of them had like a dozen blisters.
Yeah, and
even they were forced off the Camino.
Yeah.
For a day or two. So it was really serious.
Yeah, they can be very serious. No, it's good advice to take advice and go to see the best people in the business at those hiking stores, or really go and find out and do as much research as you possibly can, because you can be ruined 3 days in. It can be finished, and we've all seen it.
Terrible.
There's a great aspect of the book which focuses on your life's work in many ways, and that is as a police officer and the disappearance of Annie McCarrick. And your role in telling that story on the Camino, which is incredible. But without going into it, because it's a good part of the book and people ought to read themselves. But being a former FBI guy, are you surprised at your ability to be so emotional, to be so influenced by the energy of this journey you find yourself on?
Well, you know, I don't want to be false to myself and, you know, put on some kind of a face where I'm serious, all business. I mean, certainly there's a time for that, and you're trained to do what you have to do. But for me, I think, and you know, the success I've had in my career has been with just being honest and genuine with people, and that includes being moved. And so, you know, I've sat across, talked to witnesses and even subjects, and you know, if they know you're listening, and if they can sense that you're honest, and you have some empathy, they will open up even more. They will trust you. So that on that level, that has always worked for me. But you know, here. You know, I was trying to solve. We're trying to solve the disappearance of my neighbor, and it just so coincided that the Irish television station wanted to interview me while I was on the Camino.
Yeah.
So we decided. Yeah, you know, it's been I don't know, almost 20. I think it's 28 years since Annie disappeared in the Wicklow Mountains with some other girls. I think there's six other girls that have also gone missing. So we just wanted to keep getting the word out there, and you know, I thought, you know, Annie McCarrick, a really you know, Irish Catholic girl, you know, they were always in church. I remember the whole family, and so, you know, walking the Camino would have been something Annie McCarrick would have done too. So I just said, I'm just going to take time out of this and spend time and get the word out about Annie McCarrick.
Yeah, it's a fascinating story and a great aspect to the book. You wrote elsewhere about you and Aurora, your wife. If we learned anything, it was the Camino, like life, was a personal journey, a journey which was meant to help the traveller reflect upon the other world, breathe in the air, and wait in joyous expectation for what might be around the corner. It all seemed so simple. I love that little piece of writing because it is simple, isn't it, Ken? If you're good to other people and you treat other people with respect and you live very frugally and simply, it can be, life can be very enjoyable.
It can be joyous. That's for sure. Yeah, I mean, simplicity, I think, is you know, serves us best, and not overthinking things all the time, or, you know, that's where anxiety comes in, and just. Again, just trying to be in the moment and wait for the surprises, like that little girl just outside Pamplona. Never expected it. Came out of nowhere. I went with the flow and I made it to Pamplona.
I have to mention one last passage from the book. About a block from the Bayona railway station, I spotted a man in his late 40s or early 50s wearing a cowboy hat with his backpack parked near his table at an outdoor cafe. He was nursing a beer. Greeting him in English, I inquired if we were heading in the right direction. "Yes, you are," he said in a Texas drawl. "And remember this," he said, grinning, "the Camino is one big party."
Yes.
Well, is the Camino one big party? Was he right?
Well, there's a certain aspect, there's a certain truth to it. If that's what you're looking for, you can find it.
Yeah.
That's for sure. And, you know, we were kind of drafting a group of people where that was their goal, really.
Yeah.
You know, not so much looking for any spirituality, but just enjoying themselves, and whether that would be drink or whatever. And having fun, and you know, staying up into the late hours, just kind of whooping and hollering, and you know. But again, we've been there, done that. So that's not what we were looking for.
It's your Camino, about right.
Yeah, it's your Camino. And I'm glad you said that, because and I have to credit this wonderful these two English women who were with us right from the beginning. We separated in Burgos. Helen and Kim, and it was Helen who really tossed that out to me, and she said, "Oh, Ken, you know, it's the way you do it, your own way, and you know, whatever, 10 hours a day or two, or a bus or a taxi or whatever," and she said, "It's your Camino," and it just stuck with me, and she was absolutely right. She nailed it. It's the way you want to do it, at your pace. You know, if it's churches or castles, or, you know, if you want to be, and we met some people that were just, weren't talking, wouldn't talk, because they were deep in reflection, introspection, and, you know, that's great for them. But so you do it your own way. It's your Camino.
Do you and Aurora talk about it much? Now you're back?
Yes, all the time.
Yeah.
All the time. Yeah. We, initially when we got back, it was like our bodies wanted to keep walking, you know, and you have to say, no, there's nowhere to walk, or we're not walking 18, 20 miles today, but no, we think a lot about it. And of course, in marketing the book, Dan, you know, we talk to groups, and so, we think about it often, and we maintain friendships, that we made a year ago. So, like the nuns, we still talk to them.
What would you say to somebody thinking of walking the Camino de Santiago?
Do it. Get out there and do it. Get the proper equipment. Practice a little bit if you can, if you have the luxury of time. You know, do some practice hikes and that type of thing. But if it's 60 miles or 500 miles or whatever it is, get out there and just do it. You're going to love it. I think it's going to change your life.
Tell us a Camino story.
I found a lot of humorous things on the Camino as well. And there's a part that I wrote called "Shaken Up." Mm. And this is where we were in an albergue in Puente de la Reina. And we were the last ones in. Well, we were always the last ones in. And so the receptionist showed us to our bunks on the third or fourth floor. It was the top floor. And so we had to lug everything up there. And then we'd come in so late that they weren't able to put us in bunk beds kind of together. So Aurora was asked to go on one side of the room, and I was on the other. So we kind of split up. There was a lady who was in there, and she was kind of flirtatious. And I'm like, please, don't. And the husband was a very jealous guy, and he was just kind of snarling and very controlling. So, and she's kind of, "Oh, hi, how are you?" And I'm like, "Oh, please don't talk to me. Your husband's going to kill me." That night, you know, I fell asleep, and I think I called it a delicious sleep, because it was a great sleep. And then I had this dream that I was being shaken, And I woke up and it was no dream. You know, he was shaking me and he said, "You are snoring," in a very thick Eastern European accent. And that got my attention. And it went from, and it's funny, now I can't sleep and I'm staring up at the ceiling and in the dark. And he starts snoring. And I think, man, I should go over there, but I won't, you know. And then I have to go to the bathroom and then, you know, I head out and in the dark, I'm like tiptoeing around and trying not to make noise. And the door is squeaking, ouch. You know, I do my thing. I come back, the door squeaks again, ouch. And then like a bonehead, I grabbed from my pants, which were on the floor, because I had seen them in the light and they looked kind of scrunched up. And I said, no, let me fold the pants and I'll as I go up to the top bunk, I'll put them away. And I grabbed the pants from the leg. And then I didn't realize I had all these coins.
No.
Ouch. Ouch. And those were not very happy pilgrims that night. those coins took off in so many different directions and they just kept spinning. Ouch. Ouch.
Oh, that's a great story. You know, I can hear the Camino calling me pretty much every single day. And reading your book took me back step by step. Thanks so much for your time, Ken. I've really thoroughly enjoyed speaking with you, and I really appreciate your scholarship, because you've sat down something way outside your comfort zone. You've written a book. and really, when I look at it and I put it down, I thought, that's great. I'm looking forward to interviewing Ken. And I thought, that book represents part of your journey too, doesn't it?
Yes, it's my Camino, it's our Camino, it certainly does. And hey, Dan, thank you so much for having me. And by the way, I heard about you from another podcaster, Stephen Bauman. He does the Hour of History podcast. He mentioned you, and then when my wife and I went on the website and we found you and that beautiful song, Somewhere Along the Way, it was awesome. You've got such a beautiful voice, and it was short, sweet, and it had all the key pieces on the Camino. The only regret I have is, unlike you, we did not make it to Land's End. But we hope to do so.
Oh, how fantastic. I know it'll be calling you back and probably ringing in your ears every day. But I wanted to say congratulations to you and Aurora for your ability to share your story. I thoroughly enjoyed speaking with you. And I know our paths will cross one day. There's no doubt about it. Buen Camino, Ken.
Buen Camino. Thank you. Happy holidays, Dan.
My guest this week is the U.S. pilgrim and author Kenneth Strange Jr. The U.S. writer Thomas M. Siriano wrote in his memoir, The Constant Outsider, Memoirs of a South Boston Mechanic, 10 years ago. He said, "Each of us is a book waiting to be written, and that book, if written, results in a person explained." You can get Ken's book, It's Your Camino, One Couple's 500-Mile Pilgrimage on the Camino de Santiago. It's on Amazon and where all good books are sold. Thanks for your company as always. I'm Dan Mullins. Until next week, buen Camino. Somewhere